Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Racing Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Racing Lanes podcast. I am your host, Rico Muhammad. We're joined tonight by my co-host, of, as always, Chuck Snow, and we have a very special guest with us tonight. And to talk about that, I'm going to bring Chuck up and on board because Chuck just called me. I don't know if it was a compliment or if he was giving me a critique. He called me an adrenaline junkie because we moved the show so that we wouldn't run into problems. And because Tuesdays is supposed to be an easier day for me to be able to maneuver. But today's story time real quick, ladies and gentlemen. So I had a delivery this morning. Got to the delivery place. It was going to a Costco. Got to Costco. Costco says, excuse me, sir, you're here way too early. We're not expecting this shipment until Thursday. And I'm like, well, my paperwork says the 21st, and my rate confirmation says, well, you need to call. Oh, boy, here we go. So what happened was the customer who I was pulling this load for, they requested a day to deliver for today. But as always with these automated systems of today, they assigned them Thursday. They requested today, but they didn't get the day that they requested. They got assigned Thursday. So the load has to deliver on Thursday. I got stuck with the load on my trailer. Luckily, I have an extra trailer, but that trailer was in the shop. But due to relationships, which we talk about tremendously on the podcast about building relationships, my mechanic had a couple of reefers just sitting on his yard, and he was like, well, hey, instead of you digging around trying to make sure you get your trailer back up and running, just take one of mine. So we've been ripping and running all day trying to coordinate, put trailer, hide trailers here with loads on them and picking up other trailers and getting in position for to be get ready to get reloaded again later on this evening. But that's the story time. But the moral of the story is build those relationships. Have a little bit of, if you got money stashed away, have some extra equipment because you never do know when situations like this may arise. And if you're running that dumbbell instead of running, like if I was running all over the country, I wouldn't have had the ability to pull this off what I did today without missing a beat. And without actually gain revenue, and didn't miss a beat, got an extra $500 out of the broker for holding the load and delivering it again on Thursday. So, moral of the story is build those relationships, develop your dumbbell, and it can put you in position when things go awry to actually be able to make you a little bit more money. And with that being said, Chuck, I'm gonna let you take over for a few minutes and talk to everyone, and we'll go ahead and I'll bring up our special guest. Well, I'll let you introduce him first, and then we'll bring him up.
Okay. Blair, are you there?
Well, he is now.
We are welcome tonight. We're welcome to have Blair Oldham, who runs a company called Transmech. Blair is a mechanic himself, and what he does is he puts mechanics into trucking companies and private carriers as well. So it's a way that it's kind of a hybrid so that a trucking company or a private carrier can own their own equipment but have the opportunity to not have to deal with mechanics directly. Go through somebody like Blair, and that way if the mechanic doesn't show up or if the mechanic doesn't work out, another mechanic goes in. In our case, Blair maintains our parts room. It's worked out very well for a number of years, and because of that, I've actually suggested that some of our competitors call Blair, and it's worked out well for them as well. And I know that Blair's customers think the world of him. He knows all about building and keeping relationships. He's done a great job maintaining our fleet. We noticed that our roadside inspections are all good, and we don't have the problems on tires or trailers or anything on the road that we did at one time, especially when we were trying to do some maintenance in the yard many years ago. That doesn't work. I don't care how good you are. I don't think you can do a proper brake job in a yard unless you're in a building. But Blair, Tell us if I'm right or wrong on that one. I'll make that our opening statement.
You're right, Chuck. There's certain things you can do out in the yard or in the field, to sort of speak. But when you're getting into brake jobs and wheel bearings and things that, you know, you're going to have dust and dirt blow into, you're better off to be inside, definitely.
Now, one of the things, you know, we've been fighting with all sorts of issues with brakes since the first time I ever drove a truck. And nothing has changed except the evolution of disc brakes. And, you know, as you know, we've bought some trailers with them. So far, we're very happy. Mind you, we haven't gotten a repair bill yet for fixing any of them because they're far too new. What's your opinion on disc brakes on tractors and trailers?
Okay, yeah, with your fleet, you're good for another year, year and a half before I think you have to really get into even changing pads.
Right.
I think depending on what kind of a fleet you are, if you're a small fleet, maybe your pockets aren't as deep as some of the bigger fleets. I think you're better off to stay away from disc brakes right now, maybe until the price of the components go down. I know the rotors are very, very expensive, depending on, of course, which side of the border you buy them on. But if you were a small carrier with, you know, 5 or 10 trucks, I would think that you might want to stay with drums and shoes, just because they're probably about a third, maybe even a quarter in some cases, less expensive to maintain.
You know, it's funny. Before I bought those trailers that we're talking about with disc brakes, I was real careful, and I called an awful lot of the big carriers that we do business with in the U.S. And one of them in particular who's located in Salt Lake City, and I don't want to give out their name, just, you know, out of respect for my relationship with them, but what the vice president of maintenance said to me, he said, you know, it's when we looked at it with everything involved, it's, you know, where they sat anyways, he says, it's within pennies difference, he said, but my God, he said, when you have as many thousands of trailers as we have, the pennies add up to, you know, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars. So
yeah,
every decision we make is, of course, based on that rather than worrying about brakes being out of adjustment and all the other things. And the fact that so many of today's drivers don't know how to even check the brakes. I guess they teach them that in truck driving school. But once they get out and they haven't checked brakes in 6 months or a year, they don't know how to do it. And the one thing I do like about them is you don't have the risk of out-of-service violations. And I think that in today's market, with insurance, you know, and if you lose points or God forbid an accident, your brakes are out of whack, that's a real concern for a lot of fleet operators, I would think.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. It's and I think with disc and drum brakes as well, and automatic slack adjusters, you know, your drivers are pretty much assuming that auto slack is going to keep your brakes in adjustment. So where you don't really get that with disc brakes, although there is adjustment on them, but that's something, you know, that the mechanics do or can do when they're in for service. For an inspector to get down, or a driver to get down and look at a set of or disc brake setup, they wouldn't be able to tell if they were out of adjustment. If they'd have to be really far out of adjustment for somebody to actually notice.
You would feel that anyways when you for your braking. You'd feel that you don't have the braking power, would you not?
You would to an extent, but they're so efficient and they work so well. I think it would have to be a fairly heavy loaded truck and trailer and a very aggressive stop to say, oh, I don't think my disc brakes are working.
Yeah, well, you'd find out pretty quickly.
You would, yeah.
So now on slack adjusters, is there what sort of maintenance should, like, I'm hearing two sides of the story on slack adjusters. I've heard you never have, if automatic slack adjusters, never touch them. They should never be touched. And then I'm hearing, yeah, they've got to be, they still need to be adjusted by the shop. What does happen in a shop? Are they adjusted?
Well, it depends, because when the service is performed, the mechanic, just like the driver would do or is supposed to do, would
right.
look at the push rod travel and measure it. And if it was in within spec, you wouldn't touch it. I guess
right.
the biggest, there's a three or four different types of slack adjusters, and the way that you back some of these slack adjusters off, if you want to do a proper brake adjustment, some of them is a little pin that you pull out and release. That's simple.
Right.
But others are the ratchet type, where you're almost forcing it to go in the opposite direction, which does shorten the life of the slack adjuster.
Yeah, and they're not cheap either, are they?
No, they're over $100, you know, where we are anyways.
Right. And then, it's always a worry when you have guys going up and down the road to make sure that they're going to be checking things. And, of course, some of the big companies now, how they're getting away, and they've been doing it for a long time, they have terminals with safety lanes, which I think is brilliant. But doesn't work for small carriers. Now, are
yes.
you seeing – now, some of the shops now on the road are offering basically a safety drive-through, you know, some of the truck stops where the drivers – some of the drivers that aren't familiar with the equipment are able to go in and get their brakes checked and get everything checked. Are you seeing much of that up here in Canada?
Not really on a small scale. When you have the big carriers like the Challengers of the world, you know, they have their safety lanes, and any one of those drivers, it might even be mandatory that before a truck leaves the yard that they have to go through that safety lane. I'm not 100% sure, but I was listening to some of your previous podcasts with, you had an insurance gentleman on there. And it just makes so much sense to, nowadays with the insurance rates and the suing and that, you know, I think the safety lanes are going to become probably more and more popular over the next
yeah.
while with the insurance and that.
I can see that. I can actually see that as a viable business for people in your profession to have a place right on the side of the highway. Where drivers can, you know, without huge lineups, where drivers can get in and out quickly and get
yes.
checked. And that way, because you want to get stuff signed off that you've done it properly. You know, and these nuclear verdicts that are happening, and, you know, it's probably our number one topic on this show is, you know, the high cost of insurance. And it's all from all these nuclear verdicts because everybody's trying to sue everybody, and everybody's trying to cover their ass the best way they can, and of course it's either going to safety lanes or going to disc brakes. You know, that's why we made that investment. It was either that or safety lane, because guys just aren't doing the proper brake check sometimes, although they should be, and you tell them, and we reprimand them, and we fire them even for, you know, if somebody messes up, you just can't have it.
No, for sure. And I think that.
Let me remind the listeners real quickly. If you have a question or if you'd like to get involved in the discussion, all you have to do is press the number one. That puts you in the call queue. We will get to you as quickly as we possibly can and make sure that we get you involved in the process. And you can get up and ask your question. But I'm sorry to interrupt there, Blair. You can pick right back up.
No worries. What I was going to say was I started out in this business. Well, I did my mechanics apprenticeship first, and then I thought I would go out and drive through the 80s. Chuck and I probably passed each other several times on the interstate on 94 or on the ambassador or something. You know, it's so what I'm saying is I'm not 100% sure what the drivers are thinking when they pull over yard now, if they think, I think it's going to be okay, or is, maybe there's a percentage of them that are saying, I can't leave until I'm 100% sure that these brakes are adjusted. What do you think about that, Chuck?
I think drivers are starting to get it because they're finding out that there's no wiggle room here. You know, if you're caught on the side of the road, first of all, anybody that's ever had the misfortune in Ontario, we have something called truck jail. I just want our listeners to know this. And if you get caught with a truck or a trailer with the brakes out of adjustment, if they're way out of adjustment, you don't get a chance to adjust them. You get a chance to unload the trailer, and they lock the trailer up in the compound.
Right.
You have
Yeah.
You know, we've both seen that happen to carriers out there. And it's very, very expensive.
Wow.
So you can't afford that. And then if you get caught anywhere, you know, with your brakes out of adjustment, especially, or a big safety infraction, it goes against your record, and there goes your insurance rates, and there goes your customers, because the customers are looking at safety ratings now, and so are the good brokers. And there's go ahead, Rico.
Well, for most of our listeners, unfortunately, Blair, you know, we don't have a lot of guys. Most of our guys are five trucks and under. So, you know, a lot of times, for the most part, and I think the majority of our listeners are maybe the one truck, one horse pony. So you have a lot of guys and girls that are listening in that they try to do a lot of the maintenance themselves. And one of the things that we've been kind of trying to advocate is let professionals do what professionals do. If you're not a professional mechanic, I know the name of the game is to try to save some money, but I think your time and your efforts will be better spent trying to create more revenue and not necessarily turning wrenches on the truck, because if that's not your forte, then you're apt to leave something off or make a mistake, and everything is not going to be up to snuff 100% the way that it should be if a qualified professional was doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And where drivers, you know, when they check brakes, and some of them understand, or they, Chuck says, are supposed to understand. And I think that, a large percentage of drivers do know, to point a brake that's out of adjustment or push rod travel, to measure push rod travel. But yeah, it's almost, worth its weight in gold to have somebody look at it and say, yeah, you're good to go. And then you're not looking over your shoulder. You're not worried about going over a scale or having to go around a scale or whatever the case may be. You probably feel a lot better going down the road.
Yeah. I don't think anybody in this market today wants to go up and down the road knowing that they're running from the DOT because their truck's not safe. Like that's a fool's game to think, well, I'm going to, I know I need a brake job, or I've got a bad tire, but I'm going to take a chance and run this last trip. It's such a foolish game to play today. Number one, and I always tell people, check your tire pressure. Blair, you've been with us a long time, and you know that I'm a big proponent of retreads, and we've had really good luck with retreads because we check tire pressure.
Yes.
And what's your opinion on retreads? From what do you see with other fleets? Are other fleets that you're doing business with use them as well?
I guess it really depends what lanes you're running, but the process that we use on your trailers is the Michelin process, and the technology has come so far nowadays with being able to you know, scan the tire, the casing, and make a decision whether it should be capped or not. And I'll touch wood here right now, but I can't remember the last time we had a recap fail. In fact, I can remember the last time we had a brand new tire fail. So you're going to get it either end, either new or recap.
Yep.
But I think if you were running in the deep south, you know, California to Phoenix or something on a daily basis, you probably wouldn't go with new tires. But for what we run around here, or if you're running Chicago, like a lot of yours, I don't see any problem with running recaps. Drive tires or trailer.
Yeah, we've done both, and you know, we've had good luck with them. But the trick is to what I find anyway is to check tire pressure. And I'm always warning the drivers whenever I do a road test or I see a guy in the yard kicking his tire or hitting it with a hammer or billy jack. I always tell them, "What are you kicking the tire for?" I said, "That's not going to do anything." I said, "You need to get off your ass and check tire pressure. That's what you want to know." Because, and I always tell them, especially now that we're on e-logs, there's, you know, if you go 100 miles up the road and you have a tire problem, there's the rest of your day. You know, you're going to have a 300-mile day, you know, rather than a 500-mile day.
Yes, because it takes you can't get service as quick as you could 10 years ago or even 5 years ago because of the amount of traffic that's on the road now and the shortage of techs. So it's it is.
Now, what do you tell guys as far as checking tires? How often? Before every trip? But you know, let's just say a 500-mile trip, beginning of every trip, check your tire pressure.
I would say that would be a good practice. I mean, when we service trailers in the shop, or if there happens to be a trailer in the shop for any reason, we always check tire pressures. And secondly, to make sure there's a valve stem cap on there, because even the DOT can probably give you a warning and say, "Hey, you're missing a valve cap," because it's supposed
to
be.
Well, they can.
There.
I know that for a fact. And I want to add in, I don't know about Canada, but I know in the U.S., it can't be a plastic one. It has to be a metal one.
Yeah, it has to be the stainless one, yeah.
So to our listeners, always get a handful of them when you're at the truck stop and keep them in your truck. Because people do steal them, because they magically disappear.
Yes.
You know, that's one of the things you want to have in the truck, along with your, you know, little supply of parts, windshield washer fluid and oil, and those little rings, little O-rings that go inside the glad hands. You always want to have a couple of those as well.
Yep, glad hand seals, yep.
What other things should people have in their trucks?
Well, I guess, lights, a lot of lights nowadays are LED and that, and they're expensive, but it sure makes a difference if you have a taillight that goes out, or you have five or six LEDs that go out in a taillight, you really should replace it. It's good to have in there. Spare belts, some guys carry, of course, tires, not that we're going to change them ourselves, but at least it's a reduced cost when you have to have a tire change.
Huge.
Windshield wipers. Windshield wipers, anything that could be changed easily, I think, and a fairly decent assortment of tools. Like, you could pick up a $150 tool kit that would do a lot of things on a truck. You know, it folds up, goes under your bunk, and, you've got that peace of mind that you can probably fix something if you had to, if you broke down the side of the road.
Yeah. Just for an emergency repair, and let the, let the professionals handle the rest. But if you've got to change a light. Now, I have heard, and Rico and Blair, you can tell me if this is right or wrong. I've heard you're actually supposed to have a spare headlight in a truck. Is that true?
Well, when it comes to us in Ontario, when we do annual safety inspections, it's not something that's required, no. Now, you know what, Chuck? I'm not 100% sure. I have heard that before, but in most of the big fleets, they do have carry spare headlights. But that's a good question that maybe...
if any of our listeners know that, if they know for sure, press 1. Call in and tell us what your experience has been. If you know that by law, by U.S. law, if you're supposed to carry a spare headlight. Now, as we're moving along the truck...
As far as I don't know for sure whether or not that's law or not, Chuck, but what I've done, because, you know, I've switched my headlights over to the newer style headlights, and just a tip, you know, they're just bulbs now where it used to be the big, I think it was a big 8-inch bulb or whatever,
right,
that used to be on the freight liners or whatever. But now the headlights are just a little bulbs. And I went on another tip for our listeners, business owners. Go on Amazon, and you can open up an account on Amazon to begin establishing your business credit. This is another easy place where you can go to get established business credit is Amazon. You get established on Amazon, they'll generally start you out with about $1,000 for your business credit when you apply through Amazon. And what I did was I ordered me about 6 of those, the bulbs that we have is H7. So I ordered about a half dozen of those bulbs off Amazon, and I think they were like $6 a piece on Amazon. So I got a half a dozen of them sitting in the truck, so that way whenever and unfortunately those H7 headlights, they're really bright, but those lights seem to blow. I'll probably go through about a bulb every, I'd say every 4 months, I'm probably putting another bulb in one of the apparatuses. I don't know why they blow like that, but everybody that I know that have switched their headlights over in the Freightliners to the newer style headlights, everybody that I know is running through those headlights like candy almost. So that's why I ordered so many of them through Amazon. They had a good deal on them. I ordered them through Amazon, and that's another way for you guys and girls that we talk about trying to establish business credit. But Amazon does report to the credit bureaus. That's a way for you to, as long as you maintain that account and you pay it quickly and on time, that's another way to help boost your business credit as well.
That's a great idea. Rico, I got to ask you, when you change one headlight, you change them both?
No, I just changed the one. I did used to change both of them, but when they, like I said, they blow so quickly like that, and now I just wait until the thing goes out, and then I'll change it. I'll change the other one.
Interesting. So as we're moving along the truck, the next question I want to talk about, because some of our listeners are interested in this, so am I. You're hearing an awful lot of stuff about viscosity on oils right now. And I've heard, like, you know, I'm still the old 15W40. What are you hearing, Blair? You're right at the front line here. What are you hearing for engine oils for trucks?
Well, the 1540, like you say, it seems to be, the number one oil that, probably, like you say, a lot of your smaller, or your listeners with smaller fleets or one trucks, just because they're probably comfortable with that.
Right.
1030 is actually Caterpillar. I can remember back in the late 80s where, you know, we might send a truck into Caterpillar for warranty, and it would come back with 10W30 in it. And Cat's always told us that it's not the thickness of it or the like, it's how fast it flows through the bearings in the journal, and which makes sense. But
so you
just,
want that thinner oil, that
yeah, something that's going to flow quickly. Yeah, but there's so many different oils out there and synthetics and
I know.
And the, you know, Cummins and Volvo and Mack, they all, you know, they're telling guys to run different oils, and it can get confusing. I really do think nowadays that 1540 is probably a little bit heavy for the newer engines. But the best thing to do, I mean, if our customer will advise a customer what to use, but they're in the end, they're going to use what they want to use, what they're comfortable with, and maybe something what they've, you know, discussed with their dealer or manufacturer.
Yeah, because you know what, the stuff we grew up with doesn't always work these days with, you know, some of this new equipment. It's all different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, you look under the hood
somebody
of a vehicle today,
about,
it doesn't. Go ahead.
Someone sent me a question. I'm not sure if you want to do it or not, but they was asking, can you buy or do they offer a conversion kit to convert drums over to disc?
I'm sorry, to convert what?
To convert drums over to disc braking systems.
Oh, well, I guess if you change the whole axle, I think you could. I think it'd be a very expensive process. Yeah, it would be probably not recommended. I mean, anything can be.
So
done,
you'd have to replace the entire axle on the truck to do it.
You would, yeah, yeah, you would,
okay.
Because everything
sense.
Mounts differently. Yep.
Yeah, I
helps
think at that
well.
Point, it's probably cheaper just to get a new truck.
For sure.
Now, the next thing, since we're talking about oil, what do you think, you know, we're hearing an awful lot out there about extended oil changes. What's your opinion?
I think it's fine if you are using the extended life filter. And if you're using a synthetic oil, and there again, that depends on whose engine it is and what they're recommending. I've heard of some fleets going way up there, like 60, 80,000 kilometers before they're dumping oil, which just for you and I, Chuck, and Rico probably too, it seems, wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's but you know, you can understand, I guess, a fleet like Ryder, for example, they've got thousands and thousands of trucks, and if they can extend oil life to that extent, they're saving millions of dollars.
Yes, definitely.
You know, and if they lose the odd engine, it's a casualty of saving money.
Yeah, and somebody like Ryder, too, they can... You know, they'll experiment like that, and I don't think they're really too worried about where the truck's going after anyways, but and although the Ryder has a great program and they look after the equipment, you know, Penske
yeah.
as well. But yeah, it's it makes sense. With that many trucks times X amount of liters or gallons of oil, it's huge dollars.
You know, it's funny. There is a if you're going to buy used trucks, sometimes you're much better off to buy it from a large fleet like that because they are well maintained, and they do the amount of preventive maintenance they do is pretty good. They will replace components before they go so they don't go on the road. You know, they know that because they've done their homework. They know that on this particular model of engine that the starter goes after so many thousand miles or kilometers. So they just put a new starter in once it hits that. So
yep.
People that I know that have bought trucks from these, you know, from Penske and Ryder have, you know, they bought good trucks. They're sometimes they're, you know, they've had all sorts of things done to them.
Yeah, there's a few years ago, one of our customers, wanted to get out of the trucking business, their processing plant, and right. I was part of the team that You know, we met with, well, back in those days was Penske, or I'm sorry, Rentway.
Right.
There was Ryder, and the like the logistics behind what they do, it's remarkable because yeah, they do. They change alternators at certain kilometers, and as you say, starters or water pumps.
Yep.
Anything that particular model they know might leave their customers sitting on the side of the road. So yeah, they really do have a good program. I don't want anybody to take that the wrong way about extended oil changes.
No. You know what? I think that most of our listeners are buying used trucks. And
right.
I've been preaching to them, you know, since I got on this show, don't buy any used truck if it's built after 2007. But, you know, that's 13 years ago. You know, the 2007s that are out there are getting fewer and fewer. So you really have to, you know, you're really forced a lot of times. And a lot of companies now won't allow these people to lease onto them with a truck that old, especially if they're going
right.
in and out of California. So they're being forced, many of our listeners are being forced to buy newer equipment. And I have an inherent fear of this new equipment. And I'll be the first to say it, number one, because I don't understand any of it. And I think it's starting from what I've seen, it's starting to get a little bit better now than it was when it first came out back in 2008. What are you seeing with the newer equipment? Is it starting to work out better? Have we worked the bugs out of it?
Well, I think depending on the manufacturer, again, I think that some manufacturers have a better product there. We were having a real problem here with cold weather with the systems, but I think for the most part, it is getting better. But you still hear those stories where guys are down for days and days, and you know, if you're a small operator, well, if you're a big operator, you don't want your equipment down as well, but it's, I guess it can be frustrating, but yeah, it's, I think it's getting better in general, to answer your question.
I got a
question you're not seeing,
right now.
Go ahead, Rico.
With thinking ahead, thinking about being preventative and thinking about with an eye of trying to avoid downtime as much as possible, and I think TCA puts out a pamphlet or something like that that talks about the useful life of parts and stuff like that, how long a part will generally last, even though it may not be getting ready to break. It may not be broken, but kind of like the airport, kind of like airlines use with their maintenance schedule, replacing parts before they fail, per se. With wintertime, are there certain components, you know, with the changing over and the harsher conditions of winter, are there certain components that people might need to get ahead of right now and get in front of it and start maybe considering if they've had some components that's been on the truck for a while to go ahead and start switching out with the weather getting ready to change, weather getting a little bit more harsher, at least down, it's just starting to get a little bit more harsher down here in the south where I'm at. I'm sure I'm well aware that you guys have already been dealing with it for quite some time now. But
since November?
Yeah.
But today was kind of the first day that it was like really like it got down into the 20s today down here in Georgia, so.
My heart's really bleeding for you now, buddy. My daughter was in Calgary last week. It was 40 degrees below zero, and it doesn't matter whether it's Fahrenheit or centigrade. It's the same.
It's the same when it gets to that, did you?
Yeah.
But in the
yeah.
colder the colder weather, I think well, number one, I think everybody would agree is batteries and battery cables. If your batteries have been giving you any problem at all through the summer, then get them replaced before, you know, the cold weather hits. And make sure your cables are clean and tight, right up to your starter. Another thing for cold weather is make sure your airlines between your tractor and your trailer are good. A lot of those coily airlines get weak, and the first sign of cold weather, you know, if you're getting back into a real tight spot or something, they're probably going to break. And then also your airlines, the head of your trailer running gear, ahead of the bogies, make sure that those springs are in good shape, because for sure, if you're running through snow, you're going to have snow and ice accumulate. And if those springs are weak, you're going to drag your airlines and you're going to be on the side of the road. That's a good start anyway.
Yeah, good point. Go ahead, Rico.
I was going to ask about air dryers and things of the sort.
Yeah, air dryers should definitely be serviced on an annual basis. It's good practice, and you know, now with air dryers with cartridges and spin-ons, you can, as long as the heater's working in them and everything's working fine, then you can just spin on a new cartridge and your air dryer is serviced.
Now, how often should the air system be drained?
I would say as often as possible. Back in our days, we used to drain them every day.
Yep.
You know, guys, if they've got pull cords on them, it's easy to do.
Yeah, but I have a question. That brings up a good point here. Most of our Ryder trucks have pull cords. I used to like the old drain cock that you could just open up the valve.
Yes. Yeah. As long
and
as you
I
reach
thought it was much
air,
better.
Air tanks are so hidden nowadays.
Yeah, I guess that's the problem with all the fairings and everything, because I don't think you get a proper drain with that pull cord.
Well, I would say you probably get a good drain, but it's getting it to seat again sometime. When you pull the cord, and this probably happened to everybody, you just can't quite get it to stop leaking. And if there happens to be any ice or anything in there, it could be, you know, leaking when you roll over the inspection station or something, you know?
Yep. You get shut down for that.
Yeah. But the location of the tank, now some of them are buried pretty deep, and it's just, then they would probably never get drained if they didn't have the pull cords on them now.
Good point. You know, that's one of the things that they didn't think about when they put all these fairings on.
Yeah. It used to be easy just to reach over the frame, drain your tanks, and you knew it was done.
You know, when you were getting your paperwork signed or whatever, you just open up the valve there and clean everything out. It was, I think it was done a lot better in the old days.
Yeah, definitely. But as often as you can, that would be my answer to that. Whenever you can drain them, drain them.
Now, is there anything that can be put in that air system that works in today's environment with today's trucks and everything? Because they're not as tough as the old ones we grew up with to keep stuff from freezing up in the winter, especially our listeners that are in northern climates.
Well, we of course used to just put straight alcohol in the system, which seemed to work good at one time, but now you have to use something that's like a product called Safety Brake that's CleanFlow manufactures, and it has a lubricant in the it's still methyl hydrate, but it does have a lubricant, so it's not going to hurt any of your valves. At least that's what they tell us, anyways.
Okay, so is that what it was? Was the in the old days, putting methyl hydrate in there would dry out the valves in today's systems?
Yeah, it would. And anything rubber in there would dry it out pretty quick.
Okay, that makes sense. And I guess there's a lot more There must be a lot more rubber in some of these new systems, is there, than what we grew up with? It was probably all more metal.
Well, it's not very often you get to get right inside a valve anymore. We used to take them apart and repair them, but it's every valve is going to have rubber O-rings in it at some point. There's a lot of nylon in there as well. And it's just important that things are kept moving and they're not dried out.
Right. Now, are you what it looks like from the outside is we don't fix a lot of things anymore. We just replace them. Is that what you're seeing from where you sit?
Yeah, on certain components, like, you know, alternators and starters. Alternators and starters nowadays, they're manufactured offshore and they're cheap and nobody takes them apart and fixes them anymore. It's just put on a new component.
And
rear ends or transmissions, of course, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you still take apart and fix. But that quick change stuff, alternators, starters, yeah, it's just, nobody fixes them. In fact, I think the last local guy that would rebuild a starter and alternator, he's actually closed up shop because he nobody does it anymore. So yeah, he was around for years. He's gone now.
Just can't compete with that.
Same thing here. Same thing here. There was a local guy here in Atlanta that did it for years. Starters and alternators. You can go get it. You know, go get your rebuilt, you know, go take it in and get it rebuilt, get it redone, between 50 and 100 bucks, and he's out of business. He's no longer there.
Yeah, and although the price of alternators and starters has come down a lot over the years, but they're still not $150, but, you know, 2 to 3 times that much, depending on which one you need. But yeah, it's too bad that kind of service is gone, because if you did need it for something specialized or something that you couldn't get off the shelf, it was there, but no longer. Yeah, you're right.
And how about since we're going through a whole truck, turbochargers? Are they rebuilding them still?
Yeah, they are. There's some good local guys that, you know, turbochargers, injectors.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can get them all exchanged as well through your dealer or some of the parts manufacturers, but there is still a lot of guys out there rebuilding them. Yeah, they've got good names and
as long as they don't dynamite on you. I had one dynamite on me once, and I thought a gun went off in the truck.
Wow. Yeah, they can make a noise for sure.
Holy tamale. I actually thought somebody had taken a shot at us or something.
Or a tire blew or something.
Oh, my God. And there was smoke and there was oil. And it wasn't a cab over. It was one of those Kenworth 2000s, T2000. I've only bought one lemon in my whole life, and that was it. What's that?
I was going to say that's something, too, that some of the listeners, speaking of turbochargers blowing up and that, and it could have, your turbo could have very well blown up because maybe the oil line blew. So if you got an oil line that's running to a turbocharger that looks like it's a little bit iffy, that's definitely one thing to replace sooner than later before it blows and then your turbo goes and the risk of a fire as well.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big believer in preventive maintenance. It's cheaper to fix things in the shop than it is on the road, trust me. You know, it's like a tire. If I see a tire in the yard and it's just starting to wear, I'd much rather have your guys change it than send it out on the road and then have to get a tire guy. It's just, and you're at the mercy sometimes in the middle of the night. I paid as much as $800 for a tire.
Yeah, I've heard some $800,000. You know, a lot of times the guys or the tire provider doesn't have, you know, something used or a recap or something. So you're buying a $500 or $600 tire plus a middle of the night service call. It can easily get to be that much.
You know what I figured out? When you have a tire problem in the middle of the night, they are not going to sell you a used or a recap tire. They could have a whole truckload sitting back at the shop, and they're selling you a new one.
You better believe it.
Definitely, yeah.
Better believe it. Well, I'm looking at the clock, gentlemen, and we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. So what we always like to do is we like to always give our guests an opportunity to tell everybody if they want to, how people can get in contact with them, if they, you know, maybe be able to utilize your service, or just if they just, if you don't mind asking a question or answering a question, how people can get in contact with you, and we'll extend that opportunity to you.
Okay, well, probably the best thing, way to get a hold of me is to email me, and my email is pretty simple. It's my name. It's Blair, BlairOldham, @gmail.com.
Repeat it one more time.
BlairOldham @gmail.com.
Great, great. We appreciate it, Blair. Anything before we get out of here? Anything in closing? Some things that we might have not got a chance to talk about or to cover? Is there anything in particular that you can think of that you know, like I say, with the changing of weather or something, just something practical that you would recommend that everybody needs to make sure that they are keeping in the truck or have available to them?
But one thing we didn't mention was fuel conditioner this time of year. Yeah, there's some really good products out there. CleanFlow makes a good product. There's another product. It's called Diesel 911, and believe it or not, you can buy it. Well, you probably would believe this. You buy it at Walmart. They have got a good price on it, and I'll tell you, if you were on the side of the road and you really had a fuel line frozen up, that stuff works really well. And again, it's called Diesel 911.
I got to tell you, I'm a huge believer in diesel conditioner, and one of my own personal vehicles, it's a Ford Excursion. Blair knows it well, with a 7.3. It's got about 320,000 miles on it. Original injector, original fuel pump. I don't think the motor's quite broken in yet, and I got to tell you, I have never. I've had the truck. It's a 2003. I think I got it around 2005. I don't think I've ever put fuel in it without conditioner. So you know what? You don't have to sell me on that stuff. I would drink it if I could.
Yeah, and with the low sulfur diesel on that nowadays, you want a conditioner in there that's gonna give the whole system a bit of a lubrication.
Yeah.
Just because of the low sulfur fuel.
So what would you?
Yeah, I don't think
the conditioner, because I don't really because you got some of the old guys, you know, they always, you know, they would dump a gallon of oil, you know, just straight oil in the tank. You know? I've even heard some of the older guys, you know, say that they dump the two cycle oil in the tank. So what would you recommend as far as something like that?
I wouldn't, unless you're in a situation where you think you need that extra gallon, I don't recommend putting anything else in diesel fuel other than conditioner. I mean, guys used to put transmission fluid or our steering fluid in for lubricating and that, but some of those old engines would take anything and just keep running. But nowadays it's something that's approved in with your fuel. That would be about the extent.
I don't know if you you can get away with it today, but I remember when it was real cold out 45 years ago, we would put a little bit of gasoline in with the diesel fuel. I don't think the engines today would take it. I'm not talking about a lot. I'm talking about a pop, like 10 ounces of gasoline in 150 gallons of diesel fuel.
Yeah, and then, like I say, again, I think way back when. I remember you telling me a story about that. I think that one cold night on I-94, you said you were the only
truck
running because you had a bit of gas.
I was the only vehicle running.
Yeah. It was that cold, so, yeah.
It was 40 below zero. It was about, I think it was around 1982 or something, and I was taking a load out west, and my God, that was the coldest weather I've been in. It was 40 below zero.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, we got about Blair. We want to appreciate you. Thank you for coming on and spending some time with us tonight, and you know, helping to educate our listeners. Chuck, tell the good folks how they can get in contact with you.
They can call me at 800-388-4352. My extension is 203. It's real important to leave your extension. If you're going to call me and you're looking for a load, or you want to get set up or something, I'm glad to help you. But make sure I can call you back. One of our listeners called me last week, was desperate for a load out of Tennessee, and I know who this person is. And I made a couple of calls. I actually had a load for them, and they put their phone on do not disturb or something, and when the message was, I can't get through. So if you want me to call you back, I'll call you back, but make sure I can call you back, and I'll help you. I'll get you set up with our people. I'll get you a load if I can. I'll even get you paid right away. It's not a problem. You can also email me, chuck@traffix.com, or you can find me on Instagram, send me a private message, Chuck Snow, CEO. Hello? Hello?
Uh-oh. I'm sorry about that.
Hello. You there?
Yeah, that's the end of the show, though. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you guys for tuning in to the Rates and Lanes podcast. We will talk to you guys same time, same place next week. With that being said, God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise.
Catch you on the flip-flop.